Yes, I hissed, again and again and again, even after I broke, even after he broke. I felt him come, felt the warm rush of his orgasm as it painted me from the inside. He grunted softly and flexed into me again and again. I rode it with him, my hungry muscles opening and closing around him. "I love you," he said, his voice ragged, his breath uneven. "I love you, Shelby. Say you'll be mine. I want a wedding like this. I want kids with you. I want the rest of my life to be spent at your side."
Of course. Of course. It drummed like my heart inside me, vibrating like a song. Yes, Jonah. Yes to all of it.
54. Jonah. "That was the most Bodine thing I've ever done in my life," I confessed to Shelby as we tried to right our clothes. Shelby's hair was a just-had-sex disaster, and I fucking loved it. But her parents were outside, and so was my mother, and it was just bad form to strut on out of here looking like we just had the best pair of orgasms available to humans. "What, have sex in the town sheriff's garden shed during his daughter's wedding?" she asked smugly. "I feel a bit Bodini myself tonight." "Maybe it's the moon, or the wedding, or the gin. But Shelby, honey, I'm pretty excited about fall and winter, and every other season I'm going to be spending with you." She laid a hand over her heart. "You know how to make a girl feel special. How about you go get us a couple of gin and tonics, and I'll figure out a plan to get us out of here so we can go home and celebrate some more," I suggested. She answered by pressing a kiss to my cheek. "Mwah! I'd be delighted, sugar." Wearing a shit-eating grin, I went in search of the groom and found all hell breaking loose instead. Gibson was holding Misty Lynn at arm's length, a look of abject horror on his face.
"Just give me another chance, Gibbs," she wailed, eyeliner smeared under her eyes.
"Someone needs to tell that girl that desperation ain't attractive," Mayor Hornsblatt sighed into his sweet tea.
"How dare you try to ruin my brother and my best friend's wedding,"
Scarlet snarled.
"I knew inviting your stupid ass was a mistake, but no, we had to be nice."
"Where are Bowie and Cassidy?" I asked Mayor Hornsblatt.
"The newlyweds had a distinct sparkle in their eyes and called it a night about 5 minutes ago. I think y'all's parents are waving them off out front."
At least the bride and groom weren't here to witness Misty Lynn's meltdown.
"Come on, Gibbs. It was always so good between us,"
Misty Lynn mewled. She was a drunken mess. Her dress was grass-stained, and her hair was exploding out of the prom updo she'd fashioned.
"Never gonna happen, Misty Lynn,"
Gibson growled. He let her go, but she latched herself to him like a needy barnacle on the indifferent hull of a ship.
"Jameson, Jonah, want to help a guy out?" Gibson asked through gritted teeth as he tried to dislodge her.
"Oh, I'll help you out,"
Scarlet said, striding over and grabbing a fistful of Misty Lynn's hair.
"Now you listen, and you listen good, Misty Lynn. You ain't never gonna be good enough for my brother, and now that your daddy and Jonah's mama are getting serious, you can't try to lure him into your soggy sheets. You'll be kin if they get married, brother and sister."
"It's not true,"
Misty Lynn howled. Even drunk, she at least had an idea of how genetics worked.
"Stop making a fool of yourself in front of the entire town and grow some goddamn self-respect,"
Scarlet said, keeping hold of the other woman's hair. Misty Lynn took a swing at Scarlet, but missed. Scarlet released her grip on the hair and watched her opponent sway.
"Y'all think you're so high and mighty, but you're not,"
Misty Lynn slurred.
"Your daddy was a murderer, and your mama was nothing but a loser. People feel sorry for you. They pity you,"
she spat out.
And you know what? They're all secretly scared that one day someone is going to push your buttons and you're going to snap, just like your daddy.
She did a slow turn around our circle until she faced me.
And you. Your daddy didn't even want you, yet here you are begging for scraps.
Misty Lynn, that's enough, Shelby said coolly. She had a drink in each hand.
Oh, I'm just getting started,
Misty Lynn sneered.
I'm just gonna keep telling the truth that everyone else around here is too scared to say, that Gibson always looks like he's 5 seconds away from murdering someone, or that Scarlett's gonna wind up with a drinking problem just like her daddy.
Misty Lynn, Gibson said, his voice snapped out like the crack of a whip. Hear me. We will never be together again. I regret every moment of my time with you when I was too young and too dumb to recognize that you were just a user. She stumbled back like he'd struck her.
Oh, you don't mean that, Gibson Bodine.
You don't even know what it's like to have real feelings for someone, Gibson said, his face twisting into a mask of frustration. You string that poor bastard Rhett Gensler along just to discard him when you get bored. That's not sexy. That's not attractive. That's fucking sad. You're fucking sad. I tolerate you because you're a bootlegger, because we grew up together, but you will never be anything more to me.
Well, fuck you then,
she shrieked.
Fuck all of you dumb fucking losers.
The music picked back up, and so did the conversations of all the witnesses. It wasn't the craziest thing Bootleg had seen at a wedding. Not by a long shot. Misty Lynn turned and stumbled out of the yard. Shelby sent me an apologetic look and set the drinks down on an empty table. She headed in the direction Misty Lynn fled. Maybe a good psychological talking to would help. I doubted it. But Shelby didn't like to see anyone in pain, not even a man-eating monster like Misty Lynn. I checked the front of the house first to make sure that Bowie and Cassidy were actually gone and didn't accidentally run down a drunken Misty Lynn on their way home. I saw my mother in an embrace with Jimmy Bob under the oak tree. Sheriff Tucker and Nadine were wandering up the walkway arm in arm. No newlyweds, no Misty Lynn. I ducked around between the garage and the house again, not really wanting to be the one to break the news to the parents that Misty Lynn had just caused an epic scene. Dinner and a show, Jameson said, appearing next to me. Like a good brother, he handed me a beer. Gibbs okay? I asked. Seems to be. He's used to her freakouts by now. I scanned the backyard for Shelby. I spotted her clutch on a table and the two drinks she'd left on another one.
You looking for someone in particular?
Jameson drawled. Shelby, I said, we're kind of an official thing, like permanently. He clapped me on the back.
About damn time.
Aren't men supposed to avoid commitment? I joked.
Only the stupid ones. Round here, we all know there's nothing better than pairing off with someone who's willing to put up with your shit for the rest of your life. So, you're sticking around?
I nodded. Yeah. Yeah, I am. Shelby, too. And my mom's thinking she just might take up residency, too.
No shit?
Jameson looked downright thrilled. Yep, she's in talks with Clarabelle about managing Moonshine. Your mama? Gibson approached from behind and joined the conversation.
Yeah. Hey, have you seen Shelby?
I asked him. Not since she took off after Misty Lynn to soothe the she-beast, Gibbs quipped. I felt something, a little frisson of nerves skating through my gut. I'm going to try to find her. I don't like her wandering around in the dark after what happened when she was on the bike. Gibson frowned.
Call her. I'm probably overreacting. Call her, he insisted. I pulled out my phone, dialed. What's going on? You don't think Misty Lynn would take a swing at her, do you? Jameson asked. I heard Shelby's ringtone and felt a fleeting second of hope before I realized it was coming from her clutch. Gibson stepped off the deck and picked up the clutch, opened it. He froze, then lifted his steely gaze to me. Jonah. I knew from the tone it wasn't good. I was off the deck, snatching the paper out of his hand before I could even formulate a question. It was a sketch. Charcoal lines of a woman who looked a hell of a lot like Shelby, a naked woman. Scrawled across the bottom were the words, "See you soon." I started for the front yard, Gibson on my heels, Jameson on his.
What the fuck is wrong with you two?
Jameson asked good-naturedly. That's when we heard the scream. Misty Lynn holding a hand to her head, blood seeping through her fingers and turning her peroxide blonde hair pink, stumbled into the backyard.
Call the cops, y'all! He took Shelby!
Sheriff Tucker, Nadine, and my mother burst out of the back door of the house as pandemonium broke out in the backyard.
What's the trouble?
The sheriff demanded, but I was sprinting for the street.
55. Shelby. I had a 2 bottles of wine headache, and the rest of my body felt like I'd gotten run over by the entire Bootleg Springs 4th of July parade. It smelled weird in here. Humid. Close. The garden shed? No. Good things happened in there. This was somewhere different. So dark. My head hurt. Something was very, very wrong. I tried to remember, struggled to fish out the memories. Jonah said he loved me. Bowie and Cassidy got married. Misty Lynn. Something there, something bad. She'd done something, but what? I remembered the sound of glass breaking. Ah, she'd broken the window on Gibson's truck and was digging around inside it. Vengeance for the truth he'd told. I'd tried to stop her. I tried to move my arms to rub the daze from my eyes. That's when I realized I couldn't move them. But I was moving, or rather my body was traveling through space. Movement. A car? My senses slowly knit back together to deliver a still incomplete picture. The pain in my head bloomed bright, and I knew it was no normal headache. I could hear the rumble of an engine, feel the rock of the vehicle as it traversed uneven ground. I didn't know what had happened or where I was, but I knew I was in trouble. There was a tired squeal of old, abused brakes, and the rocking stopped. The engine cut off, and fear crawled its way up my spine. I heard a metallic clunk and more screeching.
Hello, Shelby.
Oh, God. He found me. I managed to stay limp when he lifted me out of the trunk. I needed time to figure out how I was bound, where I was, how to escape. I was not the optimistic, fresh-out-of-college, naive social worker this time. No. I was Shelby Thompson, dissertation and triathlon finisher, Jonah lover, dog mom, and bootlegger. I would not go down without a fight. It felt like a zip tie binding my wrists behind me, and I focused on the hard plastic biting into my skin rather than the hand that was caressing the backs of my thighs as I was carried. There were footfalls on wood and then a long, slow creak. A door of some sort? He flipped me over, placing me in a chair. Fear and adrenaline had my entire body trembling.
I know you're awake, Shelby,
the voice said calmly. And then suddenly there was light. He pulled the hood off my face, and I saw him in the dull yellow light of a single bulb. He was older now, and God help me, even bigger.
He'd always been a big kid. Now he was a big man. We were in a cabin. A shack, really. There were gaps in the walls and mismatched furniture that had seen better decades. It was hot and stuffy inside. It stung when he ripped the tape off my lips. Lips that had said, "I love you." Lips that had kissed Jonah and made promises just hours ago. "Hello, Christian," I said quietly. I paged through my rusty memory banks. Christian Harrell. Patterns of aggression, delusions, paranoia, and obsessive behaviors. His family had been one of the first that I worked with fresh off my bachelor's degree. Diagnoses aren't usually made in the teens, but Christian had been showing early symptoms of schizophrenia. His diagnosis had been made officially at the mental health facility he was remanded to after he attempted to fatally stab his caseworker. Me. Guilty, but mentally ill. And as a juvenile, he'd been remanded to a hospital until he turned 18. My family thought I'd put the whole thing behind me, tucked it into a box, and wiped my hands of it. I preferred that they think that, but I'd kept tabs since. That's what you did when someone who tried to end your life still existed in the world. You watched, and you waited. He'd moved with his family to Illinois, where he saw a therapist regularly, and his medication was monitored. He worked in a grocery store, and now he was squatting in front of me, toying with a knife. He liked knives.
"You've been a bad girl, Shelby."
I flinched at the voice. He'd been a kid the last time, but he was a man now.
"Hiding from me. Horning yourself out. I've been watching. You know what I'm gonna do when I'm done with you?"
I didn't answer.
"I'm gonna find your roommate."
He traced the tip of the knife down my cheek.
"He thought he could take you from me."
"How's your mother, Christian?" I asked suddenly. "Keep him talking. Distract him from the knife. He'd always been close with his mother. She was his protector. Does she know where you are? Did anyone know where you were, where we were?"
"Mom's stealing from me. She's taking money out of my room."
He scratched the back of his head with the hand that held the knife. Delusions. He'd always had trouble with thoughts about people taking things from him.
"Mom's stealing," he repeated.
"Does she know you're here?" I pressed. He laughed, an unhinged, inhuman sound. "Did you bring your medicine?" I asked. He stood abruptly, shoving into my space, his forehead pressed against mine.
"It's not medicine. They're trying to control me,"
he hissed. He was sweaty and shaking, and I felt the first lick of despair. I couldn't talk him down from this, couldn't appeal to him or make him let me go. I was going to have to fight for my life. He was mentally ill, and I was going to have to hurt him if I wanted to see the sunrise that was just starting to change the light through the shack's dingy window. Something flickered outside. A shadow. Something moving. Crap on a cracker. Were there bears up here? Was I going to have to fight off Christian and then a bear? Could a girl not catch a break? He backed away and slashed the air with the knife, ranting incoherently. "Okay, deep breaths." He'd bound my hands, but not my feet. That was a good thing. The zip tie was good, too. But I needed to get that knife away from him long enough for me to break the tie and unlock the door. Difficult, yes, but not impossible. I'd completed a damn triathlon today. Yesterday? I was faster now than I was when I was 22. Stronger, too. He'd tried this before, and I'd won. I had to win again. Dawn was breaking, the soft light chasing the dark. I needed the light so I could see where I was running. Focus on getting out of the cabin, I told myself.
"We should have been together, Shelby, but you made me do this. You made me hurt you, and now it's too late."
he raged. He hit me with a backhand, which I'd always detested in movies. It felt insulting, degrading. It was both in reality, and it hurt like hell. My face stung. I shook my head to clear my vision. The shadow was back at the window, but this time it wasn't just a shadow. It was a face, peering cautiously through the dirty glass. Henrietta Van Sickle. My heart lurched in my chest. I wasn't all alone. It wasn't up to just me. What was she going to do? What was I going to do? I needed 17 plans for all the contingencies. Was she calling for help? Was she creating a diversion? How did people in movie action sequences always manage to communicate their intentions? God, my face hurt. My thoughts were scrambling, and I did my best to slow them down. I needed to disable Christian temporarily, break the zip tie, and make it out the front door. That meant I couldn't be gentle, and I couldn't miss. "How did you find me, Christian?" I said loudly. If things went bad, at least Henrietta would have a name to give authorities. "The man," he said. "The man. The man." He was chanting it now. "A man told you how to find me?" I didn't know what was delusion, what was truth. "Why are you doing this?" I whispered.
"Why? Why?"
he roared.
"Because you always were mine, and you just kept fighting it. You couldn't just accept it."
He was back in my face, the knife pressed against my throat this time. I felt the tip of it prick my skin, felt the hot response of blood. He dragged the blade slowly, shallowly, across my neck. I held my breath. One false move and... The window shattered. His head swiveled on his neck, the knife thankfully moving a few scant inches away from my flesh. I acted on instinct that would have had my self-defense instructor standing up and applauding. Leaning back, I snapped my head forward, connecting with Christian's face. Oh, my God. God, that hurt. If my head ever stopped hurting, it would be a miracle. I lashed out with my foot. Where the hell were my shoes? It wasn't a good clean shot, but it did the trick, sending the knife skittering across the floor. My next kick was to his groin, and as he fell, I rose from the chair. My legs were jelly, but I managed to step out of his reach and cross to the door. Run! I screamed to my hero, Henrietta, through the broken window. I reached for the knob, only remembering I was still bound when nothing happened. Damn it, damn it, damn it! I hinged forward, watching as Christian came up on his hands and knees. He howled like a wounded animal. I didn't know if I should kick him again to buy more time, but I needed to get the door open. I gritted my teeth and raised my wrists away from my back. Any shoulder flexibility I'd had previously was hindered by debilitating stiffness. I brought my wrist down against my back, hard. God, that hurt, and it didn't work. Christian spit blood on the floor and started to crawl in my direction. I slammed my hands down again, this time breaking the tie. My shaking hands made a mess of trying to unlock the front door, but I managed to open the door and slam it behind me. I heard him hit the door a second later. Run! I yelled again in case Henrietta was still in the area. I took off, jumping the two steps to the ground. My feet hit the ground as the front door burst open behind me. I didn't stop to look. I just ran. Question. Do you have a favorite bootlegger? Henrietta Van Sickle. While favoritism is not oft encouraged in relationships with friends, I would certainly be remiss if I did not mention Gibson Bodine. Neither one of us minds a good silence. He has a warm heart beating under the layers of gruffness and antipathy. You can count on him, and in the end, that's what matters most. Consistency, loyalty. Gibson is the definition of always. 56. Shelby. I did not recommend running barefoot through unfamiliar woods with a madman chasing me. 0 stars. Both thumbs down. I had started down the drive, but worried that Christian would appear in the car, the same damn car that had toyed with me on Mountain Road. So after about 100 yards, I scurried off the path and into the woods. Branches whipped me in the face, and I hoped to God I wouldn't have escaped only to lose an eye. There was nothing ninja about my escape. It was either stealth or speed, and I opted for the latter. I barreled through the forest, sounding like a herd of wildebeest. "Someone help!" I screamed at the top of my lungs. "Literally anyone!" I could hear him behind me. He wasn't as fast as I was, but the brush was getting thicker, and I was slowing down. I dodged back in what I hoped was the direction of the drive. If he was on foot, maybe I could beat him on even ground. It was still dim, too dim to see far enough ahead of me. A fallen tree caught me mid-shin, and I went down hard. All I wanted to do today was eat a bunch of dino nuggets and lay around watching horror movies. Was that asking too much? Instead, I was hurling myself through the woods in a ruined dress and hoping to God someone would find me before Christian did. I dragged myself up and limped over the log. Something snapped behind me, and I could hear his ragged breathing. He was too close. I started to run again. Something big and black moved in my peripheral vision. On instinct, I glanced as I flew past. I caught a glimpse of fur and teeth, the glimmer of eyes. "Holy fucking shit!" I screamed as the bear lazily turned its head in my direction. The last of my adrenaline dumped into my system, and I turned into a sprinter. I hurdled another fallen tree, turning my ankle hard on the landing, but there was no way I was going to be a bear snack. I ran on, the trees parting to reveal what looked like trail or driveway. I heard Christian behind me and poured on the speed. There was a roar. And at first, I thought bear, but somewhere, a rational part of my brain identified it as souped-up pickup truck. I ran toward the sound. Headlights cut through the gloom of the woods. I was looking over my shoulder and didn't realize the trail turned. I came to the turn, nearly meeting the grill of the truck. It stopped so suddenly it stalled. I fell backward, and then Christian was on me. He hit me in the face again. Then his hands closed around my neck. Things got blurry at that point. There were voices, angry ones. I bit and clawed at my captor, fighting for my life, and then suddenly he wasn't there anymore. The weight was lifted from my chest.
"Shelby girl, open your eyes and look at me,"
someone snapped out the command. "There's a..." I coughed, trying to clear my throat.
"Are you okay? Open your eyes."
I pried one eye open and realized the other one was glued shut with blood or sap or a combination of the two. Gibson was looking down at me. GT pushed in on my range of vision. "There was a bear," I murmured.
"Did she say there was a fucking bear?"
GT demanded. "Henrietta," I rasped.
"She called me,"
Gibson said.
"That's how we found you."
"Is she okay? The bear didn't get her, did it?"
"We'll find her,"
Gibson promised. "Where's Jonah?" I asked, trying to sit up.
"He's taking care of some business,"
Gibson said, looking beyond us.
"You stay right where you are," GT insisted. "You almost ate grill."
He tapped the bumper of the truck. "He's sick," I whispered. "Christian, he's mentally ill."
"Shelby, sweetheart, you okay?"
Jameson came into my watery frame of vision. "My head hurts real bad, and I'm so hungry. My feet hurt, too. I think I stepped on every burr in the woods. Where's Jonah? Where's the bear?"
"Jonah's just fine,"
Jameson promised. "Where is she?" I heard Scarlet shriek in more car doors.
"Scarlet,"
Devlin called. I heard sirens then, a lot of them. Morning arrived with flashes of blue and red, and I realized the Bodines had raced law enforcement and won. The faces above me jostled, and I was staring up into Jonah's green eyes. "Hi," I said softly. He cupped my face in his hands. His breathing was ragged. There was rage and panic and fear in those beautiful eyes of his. "Why are your hands bleeding?" I asked.
"Why is your head bleeding?"
he countered. Oh, I couldn't tell if it was blood or sap. "Do I still have both eyes?" I asked.
"Yeah, two of the prettiest eyes I've ever seen."
Jonah dropped his forehead to mine. "Ow," I winced.
"Sorry, Shelby, honey,"
he said, gathering me into his arms. "I headbutted him," I said, sighing into his chest. He was still wearing his groomsman's shirt and suspenders. There was blood melting into the white. I wasn't sure whose it was. Then there was a bear.
"Can we get some EMTs over here?"
Gibson yelled over the ruckus of sirens and new voices.
"Think our girl's got a concussion."
"Hey, Jonah," I said.
"Yeah, baby."
"Thanks for making me so fast."
"You scared the hell out of me, Shelby Thompson,"
he whispered in my ear, gently brushing my hair back from my face. "Scared me a little bit, too. Henrietta saw me. She broke the window. Then you saved me."
"Gibbs almost ran you over."
"Wouldn't that have been ironic? Survive a kidnapping and murder attempt, a bear, and then get taken out by a pickup truck." I gave a half-hearted snort laugh.
"That's not going to be funny for the next 30 years or so, so don't be trying to joke about it." "Excuse me, sir."
A burly woman in uniform came into my line of sight. She set an official-looking medical bag down next to me. "I'm a ma'am," I insisted. Jonah gave a weak laugh.
"She's talking to me, Shelby. She wants me to give her a little room so she can get a look at you."
"Don't leave me," I demanded, clinging to him.
"I'm not going anywhere."
"Where is he?"
Sheriff Tucker sounded weary beyond his years, and I realized there was a whole heck of a lot we had to tell him.
"He's over there,"
Jameson said.
"He's not going anywhere."
"Is he..." I didn't want to finish the question. I didn't really want the answer.
"Just let the nice lady look you over, Shelby. We'll worry about everything else later,"
Jonah advised. I thought that sounded really smart.
57. Jonah. I rode with Shelby in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. The EMTs assured me about 56 times that she was okay, that the blood was mostly from her head wound, that the cut on her throat was not life-threatening. But my hands were still shaking. They bandaged my raw knuckles, and Shelby and I sported matching ice packs over blooming black eyes. I didn't know if I'd ever stop seeing that moment when the man tore out of the woods and fell on her, intent on removing the woman I loved from this world. That was going to take a long time to get past, to not see every time I closed my eyes. But it helped to look at Shelby smiling up at me like I was her hero. I'd pulled him off her, dragged him away, and unleashed the rage I was feeling on him. He'd got in a few lucky shots, but it wasn't an even match. Jameson dragged me off him, though I wasn't happy about it at the time. But Christian was still alive and now in police custody. He wasn't answering questions like how he found Shelby, but I had a suspicion that I wanted to run by Sheriff Tucker. They wheeled Shelby into a room in the emergency department, and I planted myself in a chair in the corner while the staff poked and prodded her and asked her a million questions. I held her hand between tests. The verdict? A concussion, a ton of bruising, and residual soreness from her triathlon.
"Shelby!"
James and Darlene paused in the doorway, looking at their daughter on a gurney.
"Hi, guys,"
she said cheerfully. While the Thompsons fussed over Shelby, I spotted Sheriff Tucker outside and excused myself.
"Had a long conversation with your mother about an hour ago," Sheriff Tucker said mildly, handing me a cup of coffee. She had some interesting theories regarding an ongoing investigation.
I've got a few theories of my own, I said, taking a sip. It was a sealed record, I told him. How many people have access to sealed records?
Shelby got into a sealed record, the sheriff reminded me. Can't be that hard.
But add it to the rest. Someone took out Abby Gilbert. Someone scared Cece Benefiel enough to make her recant her statement and now leave her house. Those remains are not Callie Kendall, but someone changed the report. Harold said a man sent him. I think that man was Judge Kendall. Maybe he didn't do his own dirty work, I said before the sheriff could argue. Maybe he has people who don't mind getting dirty. Sheriff Tucker peered into his coffee as if he were looking for the answers.
The kid was off his meds. Hallucinations and delusions are common for his diagnosis.
Frustration brought my blood to a simmer. Look, I know that we have a mountain of suspicion without a scrap of real evidence, but that's your job. You connect these dots. He screwed up somewhere, and you need to catch him.
If any of this is true,
the sheriff leaned in and lowered his voice.
Any one piece of it, we're dealing with a very dangerous individual. And I am counting on you and the rest of your family to stay real quiet while I look into this. If we're going to get this bastard in a cage, it's gonna be because we crossed every T and dotted every I. We're not getting a confession out of him. We're building a case piece by piece until that cell door slams shut. Got it?
Sheriff Tucker believed us. He believed my mom. And for the first time, I believed that everything was going to be okay. Unbelievably grateful, I nodded. I give you my word. My family won't throw a wrench in this. We've got a lot riding on the truth.
Good. Now, a word of warning. Gibson and Scarlett aren't gonna make it easy on you. They're hot-headed like your daddy. You're gonna have to impress upon them how important it is that this doesn't leak. Because if there's even a whisper of the truth, whoever sent Christian Harrell after Shelby will try again.
I nodded. I would do whatever it took to keep Gibbs and Scarlett in line if it meant Shelby would stay safe. I won't let anyone do anything to jeopardize her safety.
You're a good man, Jonah, just like your brothers, he said.
Sorry for ruining the wedding for you, I said.
His mustache twitched. My daughter married the love of her life last night. Far as I can see, nothing got ruined, except maybe Misty Lynn's designs on your brother.
I'd forgotten all about her hissy fit. I have a feeling she'll survive.
Appreciate your time, Jonah, he said, all business again. Now, why don't you get your girl and take her home? Word on the street is she's going to be discharged within the hour.
Thank you, sir. True to the sheriff's prediction, Shelby was discharged an hour later. She had a concussion, a lot of bruising, and a very empty stomach. All things considered, I feel pretty good, she chirped as I buckled her into the car. All things considered, you look pretty good too, I said, leaning in to kiss the tip of her nose. She looked awful. Her eye was swollen and purple. Her throat was bandaged. There were bruises all over her arms, and she winced every time she moved. Scarlett arrived with a change of clothes for Shelby, shorts, and an Enjoy the Journey t-shirt. The rest of us were still in our wrinkled, bloodied wedding gear. My parents said that Gibson got a hold of Henrietta Van Sickle, and she's okay, Shelby said. She saved my life. I'm so glad she wasn't eaten by a bear. About that bear, I began. Jonah, I am starving, she complained. I barely had anything for dinner last night, thanks to the sex in the shed. Did I tell you I had to confess that part to Sheriff Tucker? Talk about embarrassing. And I know you just want to drag me home and tuck me in bed, but if I don't eat something soon, my body will go into starvation mode and start hoarding fat, and it'll probably trigger a flare.
I sighed, dropping my head against the seat. I was so tired, but a sit-down with the family might be what we both needed. I cracked open an eye and looked at the clock on the dashboard. We've got enough time to make the wedding brunch.
Yay!
She said.
Ow.
We'll stay long enough for you to eat, and then we're going straight home, and I'm not leaving your side for at least the next 6 years.
That sounds fair,
she said, lacing her fingers through mine. 58. Jonah. The brunch club restaurant put us in the back room, tucked away from curious eyes. The whole town woke to the news that Shelby had been abducted from Bowie and Cassidy's wedding and then escaped, heroically injured. I imagined the rumors would reach their peak by evening. I settled her in on the padded booth and took the chair across from her. Jameson and Leah May were on our left, Scarlett and Devlin on our right. Gibson strolled in with a frown on his face.
What's with the face? Shelby asked.
Someone broke into my truck last night. Wallet's missing.
Brunch is on us, Jameson promised.
I think it was Misty Lynn,
Shelby announced. I nudged her water glass toward her.
My memory's a little foggy since I was conked in the head, but I remember following Misty Lynn out to the street. She broke your truck window with a paver from the Tucker's flower bed and was rummaging around inside.
My focus was on Shelby, but I noticed that Gibson's expression went stony. I think we're gonna need Jamie, he said quietly.
Already called her around 6 this morning, Devlin said, glancing at his watch. She should be here. Now what disaster have you inserted yourselves into, Bodines?
Jamie, our family attorney, strutted into the room in city black. She tucked her designer sunglasses into her designer bag and made a beeline for the coffee carafe. George and June entered behind her, my mom on their heels.
You're gonna need something stronger than that,
Mom announced, whirling in and wrapping Shelby in a gentle hug.
So glad you're okay, sweetie. Thanks, Jenny,
Shelby said, hugging my mom back.
Me too. You should be pretty proud of your son. I am every day,
she said, leaning in and hugging me hard.
You two can't scare me like that ever again,
she said, switching into mom mode. I laughed.
Jamie, I need to talk to you,
Gibson said, trying to drag our attorney's attention away from the caffeine she was mainlining. Reading his expression, my mom rose and went to him.
What is it?
My wallet was stolen last night,
he said. Something seemed to pass between the two of them.
One crisis at a time,
Jamie insisted.
Let's start at the top with the abduction and assault. Actually, there's a bigger crisis,
Shelby said.
You're definitely going to want liquor. Mr. and Mrs. Bodine are here for breakfast,
Cassidy chirped from the doorway. She strolled in hand with Bowie, both beaming in newlywed bliss.
Well, what in the hell happened to all of you?
Bowie asked, gaping at us.
We were quite a sight to take in.
Shelby looked exactly like an attempted murder victim. I was bruised and bloody. Jameson and Gibbs were still in the rumpled pants and shirts from last night. The girls had last night's makeup on and what was left of their hairdos.
Y'all either had one hell of a fight or one hell of a party without us.
Cassidy pouted. Shelby was the first one to start laughing, and the rest of us fell in behind her.
Would someone please tell us what the hell happened?
Bowie said, drawing his wife into the room.
I'm gonna get us a round of Bloody Marys,
Scarlett decided. We waited until we had our drinks and our meals before dishing the dirt.
I missed a Misty Lynn meltdown, Cassidy complained. Don't worry, I'm sure someone got video,
Scarlett promised. Okay, so Misty Lynn throws herself at you, gets rejected for the millionth time, and flips out? Bowie clarified. Jamie rolled her eyes.
This is the weirdest fucking town. So she storms out and Shelby follows her,
Leah May said, picking up the thread.
This was after she and Jonah had sex in your parents' shed, by the way.
Wedding reception sex. Nice, Cassidy said approvingly. Anyway, Shelby went after Misty Lynn and caught her breaking into Gibson's truck, Jameson continued.
About that, Gibson said, but nobody paid him any attention.
The next thing we know, Misty Lynn is screaming her head off saying someone took Shelby,
Scarlett said. The retelling, now that all the parties were safe, was mildly entertaining to everyone except me.
I remember trying to pull Misty Lynn out of your truck, Shelby said to Gibson. And she was crying and yelling about teaching you a lesson. Then it all just goes black. According to Misty Lynn's statement, a man appeared out of the shadows and pushed her down. She struck her forehead on Gibson's truck. He grabbed you and knocked you unconscious,
Jamie said, reading off her phone. How did you get your hands on the report already? Devlin asked, her painted lips curved.
I have my ways.
They told Bowie and Cassidy the rest of the story in fits and starts.
I can't believe we were so busy having hot newlywed sex that we had no idea any of this was going on,
Cassidy said, pushing her plate away.
I need to get into the station and get the scoop.
Before you go, I said, eyeing Shelby, there's something else you guys need to know. Mom straightened her shoulders and took a fortifying gulp of her Bloody Mary. Gibson's foot was jiggling where it crossed his knee at the ankle.
What the hell are you all up to?
Scarlett demanded. She wasn't a fan of being left out. This doesn't leave this room, I insisted.
You're starting to make me nervous, Jonah,
Devlin admitted. Shelby squeezed my hand.
I got this, she said. Okay, it all started when I asked June to take a road trip with me.
10 minutes later, the room was dead silent except for the slurp of Bloody Mary glasses emptying.
So, Callie's alive?
Scarlett asked finally in an uncharacteristically soft voice.
As of last year, yes.
Mom said carefully.
And I told Sheriff Tucker all of this after they found you this morning, Shelby. What about the report? The dental records matched,
Leah May asked, leaning in.
We suspect the report was doctored,
June spoke up.
This is a lot to take in, Devlin said. I'm gonna need like 6 more Bloody Marys,
Jameson said.
So Dad didn't hurt her.
Scarlett stared down at her plate of forgotten waffles.
Your father saved her life,
Mom said softly.
You think it was the judge that did that to her?
Cassidy asked. I could see the cop in her warring with the girl who'd lost a summer friend.
It's the only thing that makes sense,
Shelby said.
Callie was adamant about not going home. He's in a position of power. He had access to Christian's sealed file. I'm sure he's got people willing to do dirty work for him. And he loses big if Callie comes strolling back into town telling the truth. He could kiss that federal judgeship goodbye. It's better for him if she stays dead.
The important thing to remember is everything is circumstantial right now. We have to be patient and let law enforcement do their job, I insisted, remembering the sheriff's warning.
Oh, 'cause they've done such a bang-up job so far, Scarlett snapped. No offense, Cass. I'm just processing a whole lot of feelings right now.
Understood, Cassidy nodded. Sheriff Tucker believes us. This is more than anyone has known about the case since Callie disappeared, I reminded them. We'll nail him for it somehow.
And when we do, maybe Callie can come back, Mom said softly. Speaking from a place of not nearly enough vodka for this, Jamie began, I'm going to strongly encourage you all to listen to Jonah. Do not interfere with this investigation in any way. If you see Judge Kendall buying sticky buns downtown, you paste a nice-as-fucking-pie smile on your face. Because if any one of you acts up and tips him off, I swear to my red Ferragamos that I will personally destroy your life. This man has gotten away with actual murder, allegedly. And it's possible he went after Shelby through that boy, allegedly. If one of you fucks up and he stays free, his next alleged victim is on you.
She pointed a sharp red nail around the room, making eye contact with everyone. Yes, ma'am, we chorused. Jamie was a terrifying woman. I was very glad she was on our side. On that note, I announced, rising from my chair, I'm taking Shelby home. I held my hand out to her and helped her up. I heard her whimper of pain and knew we'd pushed our luck. She was going to bed and not getting up until I said it was okay. I slipped my arm around her waist, a show of affection to everyone else but a stabilization for her. She paused.
Oh, Scarlett, we need to talk about some real estate options, she said. Oh, yeah?
My sister perked up. Yeah, I agreed. Shelby and I are staying in town permanently. We're going to need a bigger house.
Billy Ray needs more space, Shelby said, beaming up at me.
And Shelby's going to need dedicated office space. I knew we were battered and bruised, and there were emotional scars that would take a long time to heal. But looking into her eyes right now, I felt our future stretch on in front of us. Her monster was going to jail, and soon the shadow that had fallen over the Bodines would be lifted forever. Let's go get our puppy, I told her as she leaned into me.
Where is he?
She asked. Millie Waggle has him and Catherine, I told her. The door to the dining room opened, and Sheriff Tucker stepped in alone. He didn't look happy.
Sheriff Tucker,
Jamie said, standing up to position herself between my family and the law.
What can we do for you?
It's a good thing you're here, Jamie,
he said, toying with his hat in his hands.
If you wouldn't mind accompanying Gibson down to the station with me, I'd be much obliged.
The only one who didn't look surprised in the room was Gibson.
What is this regarding?
Jamie asked, all scary business now.
Gibson's wallet was turned into the station this morning by a citizen concerned about the contents,
he said vaguely. Judging by Gibson's expression, he knew exactly what the sheriff was referring to.
What in the hell?
Scarlett burst out.
Did that damn Misty Lynn steal his wallet and then get mad about the condoms he's not using to protect himself from her herpes flare?
I'd rather discuss this at the station, the sheriff insisted, looking more uncomfortable than a cat under a rocking chair.
Dad,
Cassidy said, her eyes implored him. It's gonna be fine. It's just some questions. Gibson's jaw ticked.
My client and I will meet you at the station, Sheriff, as soon as we're done with our breakfast,
Jamie said, hands on hips, as if daring the man to make a demand. Much obliged, Sheriff Tucker said. Swing by the station when you have a chance, Cass, and I'll catch you up about last night.
He left, and the room stayed completely silent for about 10 seconds. Well, what in tarnation was that all about?
Scarlet finally demanded. Everyone started talking at once. Let's get this over with, Gibson said to Jamie. He left without saying a word.
If Misty Lynn turned up dead and they try to pin it on Gibson, I am going to burn this town to the ground,
Scarlet said, picking up her drink.
Scarlet, what have we said about making threats in public?
Devlin asked, patting her thigh under the table. She sighed heavily.
Not to.
59. Shelby. I woke to a cacophony of smells, glorious, greasy smells. I cracked open an eye and stretched. Billy Ray grumbled in his sleep next to me on Jonah's bed. Our bed. Jonah had carried me upstairs and, after another shower, tucked me into bed with instructions not to move for at least 2 hours. A bleary glance at the clock told me I'd been out for almost 4. My body sang a chorus of aches and pains. I was due for another round of anti-inflammatories washed down with a big glass of wine. Or a Mountain Dew. Fantasizing about a 2-liter bottle, I limped down the stairs into a fantasy land. Am I hallucinating? I whispered. Every flat surface in the living room was covered with takeout containers and junk food. Jonah sat on the couch eating a fried chicken leg.
Surprise,
he said with his mouth full. What is all this? Onion rings and cheese sticks and an entire tray of dino nuggets crowded the coffee table. There was a 6-pack of Mountain Dew and a bucket of ice on the floor. The table I used as a desk now held a greasy bag of fast food burgers. There was an entire apple pie and more fried chicken sitting on the TV stand.
It's a pig in,
Jonah said cheerfully. He crossed to me and gave me a gentle kiss.
How are you feeling?
Like I don't know what to dive into first, I said reverently. He handed me a plate.
You once asked if I ever ate garbage.
I didn't mean an entire convenience store and fast food restaurant, I laughed.
Every time I finish a big event that I trained hard for, I treat myself with a pig in.
I didn't think it was possible since you saved my life and all, but I think I love you even more right now than I did before I fell asleep, I whispered, sniffing the fried chicken.
Have at it, honey.
He grabbed the pain meds while I loaded up a plate and fished out a can of soda from the bucket. I am so happy right now, I said, biting the head off a Stegosaurus nugget.
There's also some regular nuggets and a bunch of sauces in that bag,
Jonah said, pointing with an onion ring to another bag. I can't believe you did this for me, I said, feeling way too emotional for this to be just about junk food.
It's all about balance,
he said with his mouth full. You're really sexy when you gorge yourself, I told him. He grinned at me, half of an onion ring hanging from his lips. I laughed.
How are you really?
He pressed. I grabbed a burger, unwrapped it, and took a bite. My eyes rolled heavenward. I feel like so many weights have been lifted that I might float away, I confessed.
I talked to Cassidy,
Jonah said.
Christian was treated at the hospital and taken to a secure mental facility where he'll be evaluated to see if he's fit to stand trial.
He won't be, I guessed.
He's not getting out again, Shelby,
Jonah said.
Not even if he stays on his meds. His mother wants to talk to you when you're up for it. She feels responsible.
She's not, I said, shoving a few French fries into my burger bun.
And she probably just needs to hear it.
What about Gibson? What was all that about this morning?
Cassidy was pretty cagey about that, but I managed to drag some info out of her, playing the "my girlfriend was abducted from your wedding" card.
Mean?
Yeah, well, you're my girlfriend, and Gibbs is my brother.
So what did Misty Lynn find in his wallet?
A picture of Gibbs and Callie together.
The burger stuck in my throat, and I coughed. I took a swig of soda. Like from before she went missing? He nodded. What kind of a picture?
It was one of those photo booth deals, a strip of pictures that were making faces.
I didn't know he even knew Callie, I said, going for another nugget.
No one did. That's the problem. He never said a word in all those years, so naturally the cops have some questions.
Where is Gibson now? Did they let him go?
He was released after a formal interview. Now he's back to playing hermit. He won't talk to anyone.
No charges, at least. That's good.
For now. We'll see what happens next. The judge is going to know that Gibbs was interviewed. The why is going to come out.
Maybe he'll stay away? If he did turn Christian loose on me, wouldn't he want to stay out of bootleg for a while? Keep his hands clean?
If he knows what's good for him, he'll steer clear,
Jonah said stonily. You Bodines and your bootleg justice, I sighed.
This will end with him in a cage,
he promised.
And it's all going to be okay.
It will be, I said, reaching for his hand and bringing his bruised knuckles to my lips. What's next? I asked him.
We wait for law enforcement to sort the shit out, I guess. Keep our mouths shut. You and I are going to do some house hunting. You'll do some job searching and schedule your dissertation defense and an appointment with your rheumatologist to head off the flare that's probably headed in your direction. And after your brother proposes to June in a few months, I'm going to start ring shopping for you. We Bodines take turns.
I gaped at him. First of all, I meant, what are we eating next? Secondly, I forbid you from proposing for the first 18 months of our relationship. We're still in the honeymoon period. We need more time to make sure you don't turn into a jerk.
Oh, definitely the pie. There's whipped cream in the fridge,
he said, ignoring my demand. He got up and loped into the kitchen. Returning with a spray can, he paused in the doorway and sprayed a dollop into his mouth. Jonah, I've seen you sweaty and shirtless. I've seen you do pull-ups until the veins in your arms tried to explode. I've seen you completely naked and wet in the shower. But I have never been more attracted to you than I am right now. He grinned, and when he kissed me, it tasted sweet and full of promises. Billy Ray bayed from upstairs. There was a thump when he threw himself off the bed and stampeded down the stairs, barking accusatorially. We're right here, buddy, I assured him. He nosed at the food on the table. You may have one dino nugget, but that's all I'm willing to share.
Hey, how many kids do you think we should have?
Jonah asked, picking up the remote control.
You like kids, right?
I let out the air that had trapped itself in my lungs. I like kids, I said carefully.
I think it would be cool to have a family here, surrounded by family. They'll have cousins and aunts and uncles.
I felt a warm, gooey sensation in my stomach. He settled on the couch and arranged me between his legs so I could lean back against his chest. Outside, the birds chirped and the sun shone. Neighbors poured sweet tea and gossiped. My parents walked their grand pig. Jonah's mama snuggled up to her boyfriend at the ice cream shop. And everything felt just about perfect. Hey, did I tell you about the bear I saw? Epilogue. Shelby. I was pedaling my butt off, sweat beading on my arms and dripping from my chin. Jonah was next to me in the darkened studio. It was just the two of us. The music thumped off the walls, reverberating in my bones. I could see the last mile ticking down, down, down. Almost there. He flashed me his heartbreaker grin in the dark. Keep going. My legs were burning. A white hot fire under the skin had consumed the muscle and was now devouring bone, and I kind of, almost, sort of didn't hate it. Go, Shelby, honey, go! Jonah crowed as the screen on the far wall clicked over to 50. I slumped over the handlebars in relief.
No, you don't. Keep moving. Bring the heart rate down slowly, he said, stepping off his bike.
He rested his hand on my neck, his thumb brushing the scar I bore there. A reminder of how close we came to nearly losing it all. A reminder that every day together was precious. But the past was officially the past, never to haunt us again. And the future stretched on in front of us like an endless happily ever after. How come you get to stop? I huffed, but I managed to make a wobbly revolution of the pedals while I complained. He crossed the room and grabbed two fresh sweat towels off the shelving system next to the festive fake Christmas tree and returned to me, still grinning.
50 miles, Shelby. Not bad for a little ankylosing spondylitis.
I took the last of the resistance off the bike and let the momentum carry my legs around and around. That sentry ride isn't going to know what hit it, I predicted breathily. Jonah and I had signed up for a romantic 100-mile bike ride through Canada this coming summer, and we were spending the cold West Virginia winter training in his new gym space. He changed the music on his phone from hard-driving, celebratory rock to a slow, sweet country ballad. It was adorable how Bootleg Springs had claimed yet another victim.
How you feeling?
He asked as I took a swig from my water bottle. Tired, but good, I said. I promise. He looked nervous, excited. What's going on with you? I asked, pointing a finger in the direction of his handsome face. My flares had been few and far between since meeting Jonah, and when I did get knocked down by one, I had my handsome, pushy boyfriend to pull me back up. I was thriving. We were thriving. Jonah's new gym was a bustling gathering place year-round for townsfolk trying to work off a few extra pounds during the holidays, for summertimers trying to maintain lake bodies, to his loyal elder following, who mostly just wanted to gossip and watch his back muscles flex. With my PhD hot off the presses, I'd landed a research professor gig at the nearby Buck State University, where I was heading a decade-long study on the opioid crisis in communities. My survey was also being rolled out as a nationwide initiative to identify, among other things, loneliness within communities and potential solutions. And I was working on a book, the story of how Bootleg Springs claimed me as its own. Billy Ray was now almost full grown, though he still acted like a puppy. Fortunately, our paper towel consumption had finally returned to normal. Best of all, we finally had a home. We'd saved and searched, weighed our options and overthought. And then on Thanksgiving Day, just last month, crowded around the huge table in Scarlett and Devlin's new home, the Bodines had handed Jonah a set of house keys. The keys and deed belonged to the Bodine childhood home, now stripped of old, sad memories, refreshed and renovated, ready for a new family. Our family. Jonah, I lost my train of thought immediately. Jonah Bodine, my boyfriend of a year and a half. Scratch that, my boyfriend of exactly 18 months. Was on bended knee in front of my bike.
Shelby Thompson.
Jonah Bodine, I whispered back. My feet froze in the pedal cages.
It's been exactly 18 months since you and I first decided to start this summer fling,
he began.
And as you instructed me, couples shouldn't even start talking about the future until they've survived 18 months.
I do recall imparting that information, I said, bringing my fingers to my lips. My hand was shaking. My vision was blurring, and I had the distinct suspicion that it wasn't sweat.
It's been 18 months and one wild ride. You were there with me every step of the way through everything my family went through. You were by my side when things seemed like they were at their darkest. You stuck.
I pressed my fingers against my lips harder as his words hit bullseye after bullseye dead center in my heart.
You showed me what a partner is supposed to be. You let me in, let me fix things on occasion, and Shelby, honey, I can't wait for the next 18 months with you. The next 18 years, the next forever. I'm ready. Are you?
I nodded, blinking back tears, and kept nodding.
Good, 'cause I've got something real important to ask you.
He revealed a small black box, and I held my breath while he opened it. It was a simple, oval solitaire that glittered like a thousand stars on a delicate gold band.
Dr. Shelby Thompson, would you do me the great honor of being my wife? Running herd on a bunch of loud Bodine kids, riding through Canada and running through everywhere else, growing old here so we can cause a ruckus at the lookout. Would you do all that with me?
I could barely get my feet off the pedals. I launched myself at him, mostly out of joy, but also a little because my legs weren't working yet. He caught me. Jonah always caught me.
Is that a yes?
He asked, his voice muffled by my sweaty hair. I nodded and kept right on nodding. It's the biggest, loudest yes you've ever heard in your life. We laughed, fumbling in the dark studio for the box, the ring, the kiss. It was salty and sweet and everything I'd ever dared dream of. And so was Jonah. My parents were going to be thrilled. Hell, the entire town was probably going to throw a party. This isn't going to interfere with Gibson's wedding, is it? I asked. Jonah laughed.
My brother and I already discussed it. It's all good.
It's better than good, I said, watching the diamond wink on my finger. The sparkle blurred before my eyes. It's perfect.
We've got about 20 minutes before my phone starts ringing off the hook with Scarlett demanding to know if it's official yet and insisting we come over to celebrate. She's making dino nuggets for you.
I snort laughed and covered my mouth. 20 minutes? We can get into a whole lot of trouble in 20 minutes.
I've got a bottle of champagne on ice in the locker room. What do you say we pop the cork and get cleaned up?
The way those green eyes sparkled, brighter than the diamond I wore, I knew exactly what he meant. Jonah, you are going to be everything your father never had the chance to be. You know that, right? He already was. The good man, the generous neighbor. Now, he'd be the dream husband, the wonderful father he never had. He cupped my face in his big, warm hand.
That's the plan, Dr. Bodine. And you're everything I ever wanted.
This has been Gin Fling, Bootleg Springs Book 5, written by Lucy Score with Claire Kingsley, narrated by Natalie Duke and Stephen Dexter. Text copyright 2019 by Lucy Score. Production copyright 2020 by That's What She Said Publishing, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.